As we, that's going to come back. So talking about our favorite superheroes is going to come back in just a second as we get into deeper into talking about miracles. And so because as we so we look at the Christmas story, everywhere we look, and we kind of talked about this a little bit last Sunday, we see miracle upon miracle. And I just don't think we talk enough about miracles these days. And I think sometimes we, because we're in such a modern, scientifically driven culture, we tend to shy away from the supernatural and the miraculous and God's hand and intervention and involvement in our lives. You know, we kind of put that in a special category. Well, you know, it's a Christmas. That's kind of a fairy tale Bible sort of, that used to happen. But, you know, now we know more. No, we don't know how angels show up and young women, you know, miraculously give birth, you know, like we see in the Bible, and how centuries before we could have such detailed prophecies and just the kind of incredible events, you know. So these things still mystify and amaze us. And so, but God is still at work, and He's still doing big things and little things. And I want to continue to encourage us to really take a close look at our lives. And today we're going to kind of take a spiritual inventory, kind of a miracle inventory in our lives. And I hope that you will really be encouraged to look a little deeper into some of the events in your life and see that there may be more than meets the eye. I love this image of this iceberg, you know, and just how icebergs are famous for being much bigger in reality of what you don't see than what you just do see on the surface. And a lot of times, God's involvement in our lives, I think that's a pretty good reflection of His involvement in our lives. It's much bigger than we can ever imagine, much deeper, much more involved, much more foundational than we're able to even give Him credit for because of what's going on behind the scenes and how He works. And I want to share one of my favorite stories from the Bible, one of my favorite Bible heroes who literally in his day was a superhero. I mean, he was just renowned for being able to do things that no human being could do. And God just did special works and wonders through this Old Testament prophet. And so let me give you a little background on who I'm talking about. So maybe you've heard of Elijah in the Old Testament. So maybe heard of King David. And so his son was King Solomon. So they had a pretty good thing going, father, son, right? And then Solomon's kid just blew it all up, started a civil war, and that's when the kingdom of Israel just divided and just had one bad king after another. You had kings in the north, kings in the south. It literally was a civil war that never was mended back together. But in the times of these kings, and it was a real crapshoot whether you were going to have a king that was going to do any good at all. Most of them really, really were very selfish, and there was a lot of animosity and antagonism between God's prophets and the kings. And poor Elijah, one of the most powerful and outspoken and gifted prophets of his time, was always on the run, usually, and from his own king and queen. You know, when you hear the term Queen Jezebel, that, you know, watch out for her, she's a real Jezebel. You know that, you ever hear that phrase, you know, coming from the real life wife of King Ahab, and she was, her goal in life was to hunt down Elijah and get killed. And so Elijah was always on the run. Okay, but we're not talking about Elijah. We're talking about the guy Elijah mentored, young Elisha. And so one of the most amazing stories about Elijah was he's one of two Old Testament heroes that didn't die the normal way of mortality, of going to the grave. He was just just caught up to the heavens. And Elisha and a few teenagers are the only ones that saw this event happen. But he was caught up in this chariot of fire and just that swooped down from the sky and took him away. Nobody's ever seen Elijah since. And so Brownie points to the other Old Testament hero. Yeah, all right. Well, you might want to save that one for me. Or I'll take me out for a cup of coffee or something like that, or do a little Googling this week. So I'll leave you hanging on that one. And so Elijah, before he gets ready, because he knows that his era has come to an end, he looks at Elisha and he goes, "Any last wishes, pal? You know, before I take off, and now it's going to be up to you to pick up where I left off." And Elisha's going, "Oh boy, you know, I've got to, now I'm going to be the one dealing with Ahab and Jezebel and all the things going on around me." And he's like, "Okay, if I'm making, I mean, you've got one wish, basically, from the genie. You know, how you always ask for more wishes, right? That's what you're supposed to do." Basically, what he does, he goes, "I want what you got, Elijah, only double." And Elijah, like a great mentor, you know, puts his arm around him and puts his cape, his mantle on him, and says, "You got it, Elijah. Whatever I've been gifted with, you now have done it." And so Elisha became pretty famous. Now, even more renowned than Elijah even ever was. And Elijah was amazing. Some of the things, I'll let you read about in the books called 1 Kings and 2 Kings in the Old Testament. So here we find Elisha confounding the enemies of the kingdom of Israel. Everybody wants a piece of Israel just because they've got a good thing going. They've got a solid kingdom, land, treasure, all this stuff, and everybody's out to get Israel. They're all constantly being attacked. And so, however, nobody can get to them, because anytime somebody's trying to make plans, Elisha, it's almost like he's got, it's almost like he's kind of Bill Belichick on the sideline, just listening in on the other team's plans. And so, a little hit to the Patriots there. Sorry, Patriots fans. But let me share this story with you. And I just want you to see, it's going to lead up to an amazing event that the first time I heard the story just really struck me and caused me to look at the world differently ever since. Now, the king of Aram was at war with Israel, one of the nearby kingdoms. After conferring with his officers, he said, "I will set up my camp in such and such a place." This would just continue to happen. He'd make plans. Then the man of God, and this was the nickname for God's prophet. And so now the man of God is Elisha, since Elijah has taken off. The man of God sent word to the king of Israel, "Beware of passing that place, because the Arameans are going down there." So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and again, Elisha warned the king. What's the movie that got the Academy Awards this last time? What's the calculator machine they made to crack the Nazi code? On what? Yeah, the Turing machine. And so basically, Elisha was a walking, talking Turing machine, because he was just getting that information. And so God gifted him in being able to know what the enemy's plans were. So time and time again, Elisha would just warn the king so that he was on his guard in such places. This enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and demanded them, "Tell me, which of us is on the side of the king of Israel? It's got to be an inside job. How are they always beating us to the punch? Where are they getting their advantage? It's, you know, who's the mole on our team?" "None of us, my lord the king," said one of his officers. "But Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom." "Go find out where he is," the king ordered, "so I can send men and capture him." The report came back: "He is in Dothan." Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God, so this is Elisha's servant, got up and went out early the next morning,
An army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. "Oh no, my lord, what shall we do?" the servant asked. So here's Elisha's servant getting up early, going out, and the place is surrounded by the enemy. And Elisha, you know, sipping on his cup of coffee, as cool as can be, just with a nice little easygoing stare. "Don't be afraid," the prophet answered. "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And Elisha prayed, "Open his eyes, Lord, so that he may see what I'm able to see, what you've allowed me to see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. You know, we sing a song here at our church. It's a Chris Tomlin song that it was inspired by this passage. And we sang it last week, "Whom Shall I Fear?" It's got that cool line. Now I'm blanking on the line. Ryan, help me out. The one where the God of angel armies is always on my side. And so here's Elisha being able to be so confident because he sees God's miraculous presence where no one else can see. And so now his confidence is building up in his servant. And now his eyes are open to see the spiritual realm. And he can see what reality for what it's for. And he sees that around this army, this human army, is this angelic army that is so much more vast and powerful. And so no wonder Elisha never sweats any of this. He knows that God is able and in control and so much more powerful than any of his enemies.
And so now the servant is clued into that. I remember, think about it. Think about what we can see. I mean, look around a room like this. I once read a story of a man who later in life became a pastor after a near-death experience where he really had this incredible experience with God. And it just turned his life around from being an atheist. He was an art professor, and he just gave his life into ministry. And he said, ever since that experience, anytime he was in his church, he could see angels, throughout the church, and and joining in the praising and the singing of their church. And he just had this gift to be able to see into the spiritual realm. There's angels right here. You all have guardian angels, by the way. I think some of you have a team. It's probably needed. But if we were able to look around and see reality for what it was, I mean, we would just be so much more confident, so much more encouraged, so less stressed to know and feel and see God's presence for what it is really in our lives, like Elisha could see. This was so real to him, and now it became real to his servant, and just relaxed. Okay, the story gets better. That's the only point I wanted to make from the story, but I can't leave you hanging on this one because of just how funny it gets. Okay, so as the enemy came down toward him, so not only did this inspire a Chris Tomlin song, it inspired a George Lucas well-known character. Elisha prayed to the Lord, "Strike this army with blindness." So he struck them with blindness, and as Elisha had asked, Elisha told them, and I just can't help thinking about Obi-Wan right now with a Jedi mind trick, because these soldiers that have pounced upon him at his little home, he's basically said, "No, these are not the droids you're looking for." He's basically, "This is not the town. You're looking, this is not the road, and this is not the city you're looking for. Follow me, and I will lead you to the man you're looking for." And he leads him to Samaria, which is home base where it's the king's, it's the palace. They entered the city. Elisha said, "Lord, open their eyes so that these men can see." Then the Lord opened their eyes, and they looked, and they were inside Samaria. And when the king of Israel, so that's the capital of the northern kingdom, by the way, and so they've been had. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elisha, "Shall I kill them? Shall I just take care of them?" Elisha said, "Well, that'd be way too easy. Don't kill them. Would you kill those you've captured with your own sword or bow? Set food and water before them so that they may eat and drink and then go back to their master." So he prepared a great feast for them. After they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away and they returned to their master. And the bands of Aram stopped raiding Israel's territory. They just gave up. They said, "Okay, these guys, we're not messing with them anymore." And so, but just one of the best miracle stories in the Bible to me, because it just reveals that God has a presence and is at work in ways that we can't see, and we can't be satisfied with just believing what we can see. We've got to live our lives in a way where we're taking on faith, we're counting on God's work, even though we can't see it. Because that's what miracles are all about. And I love this definition of a miracle: a surprising and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws and is therefore considered to be the work of a divine agency. And God's hand is at work in your lives in ways that I know we're all missing, and we all need to get better at being aware of and taking a closer look into our lives. And we looked at this quote from Einstein last week, and I just wanted to look at a couple of these quotes again because they just love what they say. There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle, and the other is though everything is a miracle. And as we take a closer look into our lives, I love how Lemony Snicket puts it here: miracles are like pimples, because once you start looking for them, you'll find more than you ever dreamed you'd see. And so this is what I love instant replay stuff in professional sports. I love the whole super slow-mo, let's take another just painful detail, just like, okay, I just want to see, right where that ball was. Did it cross the goal line? When did the ball leave the guy's hand before the clock expired? All those little things, because you can miss so much. It's so easy to miss it when it's live and things are happening so fast. And it's the same thing in our lives, that if we don't take time to really look and review and play the film in slow motion, we're going to miss a lot. So I want to ask you to take a spiritual inventory and maybe think on some significant life events that you've experienced. And I'm just throwing out some basic topics that probably most of us, share some of these. Can you go back in time a little bit and really think, yeah, I never really thought about that. That's kind of weird that we were at the same place at the same time, and now I've got, 20, 30, 40 years with this person. And a whole, how did that come about? Have you ever really put any thought into that? I mean, that's a big life event. That was no accident. It's kind of funny how I got that job. I guess that one person, I've got a good friend who has the most awesome job. I mean, the most killer hours, tons of money, just flexibility, I mean, all this, and he doesn't have any education toward that particular. He just fell into it because of a buddy from a girlfriend who's, it was just this, it's like, wait, how did you get this job? It's like, tell me again, it's like, have you ever really thought about how those connections happened? Because so many times we'll think, I worked so hard to get that. You had some help. Somebody was making connections and looking out for you and putting the finishing touches on making that last link. But I mean, from our home story is a little bit of a miracle, but I want to share I want to share a couple stories here, and it's been really fun. Last week, I invited you guys to share your miracle stories with me, and I'm a little overwhelmed, but continue sharing, and I'll just try to pick off a couple, you know, each week as we go through this miracle series. But I told you I'd share, and I'm finally at a place, I think, where I can really talk about this little story that happened to us this summer. And I mentioned it when we got back from our trip a little bit, and you guys saw Eva's little cast on her arm. But the fact that she walked away from this thing, I still can't figure out. I took pictures of it. I even had her come and take a picture of where this fall happened. And so she's walking down the pier. You know, the water's so low at the lake, you know, this old beach, you know, that, you know, where it used to be water. And so she's walking along this, like, 8-foot-high pier, and something gets in her eyes, and she's just, you know, can't really see what she's doing. She just walks off this dock and just face plants onto, this is like hard sand right here, but just a few feet from rocks, and you can't really see these sharp, funky stumps. They're just, there's no coming back from fall like that if she's, 6 inches one way or another. And even just a face plant on that hard packed sand, I just can't figure out how a tiny little fractured wrist happened. But it's like, well, don't ask too many questions. But I just wonder if I had Elisha's gift, what that would have looked like that day. I think God puts his green berets on some of these kids, because they're so squirrely. They need real, they need guardian angels that can really move and react quick. But somebody helped that landing, because that's just, physics. Einstein would not, would have a hard time saying no, that's all you come out of that. We explained it to, when the paramedics showed up, because somebody saw, people saw the fall, and I was out on a kayak, and somebody, a guy on a jet ski came up behind me and said, "Hey, are you Rick?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And I'm, "Well, man, what have I done now?" and he goes, "You're wiping you back at your beach because your kid took a fall, and we think it's okay, but, I'm running down the beach because I can run faster than I can kayak." And I'm hearing sirens and along, a whole team rushes to her, and everyone's describing the fall, and the paramedics are like, checking out head and neck and all that. So the next few hours were kind of tense that way, but all that came out was a tiny little wrist deal. It's just an amazing little experience. And that's just our most recent one. But what are those events in your life where you just kind of go, "Well, I guess that was lucky. I think I've got enough life under my belt to know that there just isn't luck. There's a very personal, involved God that's making a lot of connections and watching over a lot of very, very difficult situations." Okay, so here's one of the stories I got in this week, and talking about how we, how I met your mother, how we met our spouse, kind of stories. And so here's one from Pete. And so it's August of 1972, and while transitioning home from my first tour, why'd you go back? You're just my first tour. To Vietnam. I was, way to go. I was lying in my bunk praying. I had gotten in trouble, .. and was in a very bad place emotionally. I was talking to the Lord, telling him that I was lonely and tired of living without someone to walk life with me. Somehow I knew that the Lord had chosen my mate, and I told him I was ready for him, praying that he would please provide someone for me soon. Prior to arriving in the States, I was told by my superiors that I would not be able to leave the ship because of the pending disciplinary action. When we arrived in San Diego, I was told I could leave for the holiday weekend, which was Labor Day. My parents drove down to San Diego to pick me up and drove us to a resort in Auburn, California for the weekend. Saturday, my Navy buddy from boot camp called to say he was coming up to the lake and was bringing his brother, girlfriend, and a cousin. Cousin. I asked, male or female? To which he responded, female. I asked, she cute? Oh, yeah. With everything going on, I completely forgot that conversation. But see, these are the things. Go back, and then you start to go, oh, that's right. You know, it was my buddy's cousin that, you know, just randomly coming up that weekend, the 1 3 days that I was going to get off. Oh my gosh, I prayed about, you know, just upon further review. When you wind back the film and you watch it again now in slower motions, like all these things, you start to see that maybe you never saw before. Totally forgot that conversation, that this girl was going to be there. They arrived early Sunday morning and made their rounds, introducing everyone. We were still in our sleeping bags as we had stayed up partying until 5 a.m. that morning. This is 1972, by the way. Okay, so They went out on my dad's boat for a ski, and while they were out, I started to wake up thinking, wow, she was a really cute blonde. We had a lakefront house, so when they got back to the dock, I was watching from the deck. Up from the dock walked the most beautiful angel I had ever seen, calling. And there's a little line I'll leave out about a bikini. Okay, you have to understand that because I had only been back from Vietnam a few days, I was still in culture shock. And was being very reserved. I really wasn't looking for any kind of relationship. I guess I had forgotten my previous conversation with the Lord. Anyway, things went very well for the 2 days we spent together. I found out she had been living in Japan for the last 3 years with her family and only been back in the States 1.5 months. Okay, so you're the coordinator. God's got this mate. I mean, and I really believe this. I really believe he's got all this scheduled and picked out in our lives, and it's for us to walk into. And so, but how do you coordinate this stuff? Okay, we got a weekend leave for Pete, and we got to bring Colleen back from Japan and get her at that lake. And so, you know, through her cousin, and get all this stuff fixed up. Does that blow your mind? I mean, that is a mind blower. That's why it's just so amazing, the miracles that happen around us. Colleen later told me that she cried on her on the way home Monday afternoon thinking, you idiot, you've fallen in love with a sailor, you know better. Well, that was 43 years ago, and the real miracle is that Colleen is still with me after all I've put her through. And it will continue with God's grace, mercy, and love. Pete, thank you for sharing that story. It's so cute, but it's heartwarming, but it's so real. And I think it just symbolizes so many of our own experiences. You know, and just when we go back and we really take a closer look, how, wow, something was going on that's more than meets the eye. I want to share a little story, fast forward to the New Testament. There was one guy having a real hard time believing that something so astounding could happen. And he missed out on the first appearance of Jesus being resurrected and showing himself to the disciples. And Thomas, that we, you know, gets the nickname Doubting Thomas because he was skeptical. And I don't blame him. I would have been in the same shoes as Thomas. Thomas was loyal. He was devoted. You know, you don't want to sell Thomas short. He's the guy with the line that everybody's trying to keep Jesus from going to Jerusalem for Passover because everybody's gunning for Jesus. And Thomas says, well, we might as well go with him and die with him. We might as well be together and, you know, and go on the suicide mission together. And so even, you know, he was loyal to the end, but he just couldn't believe that Jesus lived through that. He saw it. He saw the crucifixion. There's nobody's coming back from that. And no, Thomas, really, he's alive. And, you know, and Thomas said, look, guys, I don't want to ram your prayer, but unless I can see it with my own eyes, unless I can, like, put my finger in those holes that I saw those don't know if I can believe. And Jesus never lodges Thomas for that. Thomas never gives a soul. Jesus is totally cool with Thomas needing to see. And Jesus did all kinds of miracles. At one point, he says, look, guys, if you don't believe me, believe at least the works that I do. I mean, isn't that a little bit of a hint that I'm here for you and trying to do good things? You know, if you don't buy into the theology that I'm the Son of God, at least soften up to what you're seeing here. Jesus wants you to see His work in your life. It's okay. Take a close look. Have a look. And he made a special appearance. He made sure Thomas was going to be at this next one. And he seeks out Thomas and he says, Tommy, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand. Put it into my side. Remember where the centurion had taken the javelin right in the side of Christ on the cross. Stop doubting and believe. Now you can stop. You've seen it. You know, open your eyes to what I'm doing. I'm here. I want you to see what I'm doing because I don't want you to live with doubt. I don't want that to plague you. I want your heart to be full of faith and confidence. I want you to be at peace. I want you to be able to sleep well at night and not worry about the finances. Not worry about the relationships. Not worry about the work. I've got that under control. There wouldn't be any of this if I hadn't been making these connections in your life. It's all coming from me, Jesus is saying. You can count on me. You can count on what I'm going to do in your life. Because I don't think you've been looking closely enough. Have a look. See. Here I am. Here I am for you. You don't need to doubt. Believe. And so that's God's message to you this Christmas. Is take a closer look. Feast your eyes on what I'm able to do in your life. I don't want you to miss a thing. But I want you to be confident and at peace. And let those worries go away. Trust me. I'm here for you. And so, Jesus, we thank you for that. We thank you for that message of Christmas, that it's a miracle, but life is full of miracles. And you're so involved in every detail of our lives. And so, Lord, bless us this Christmas season with being able to see that more clearly than we ever have. Let us spend some time this week really kind of reviewing some of these big moments and a lot of the seemingly small ones where we can give us the opportunity and the gift to be able to see how you've been at work in our life so that we can see more clearly as we move forward so we don't miss a thing and so that we can appreciate your presence in our lives and we can learn to count on it and trust with a stronger faith. Our best friend in our Lord. And in Thomas's famous words, our reaction is, my Lord, my God. As we submit our lives to you, Jesus, we just thank you and we pray this in your name. Amen. Well, I want to continue to invite your stories. Email them to me, text them to me, leave me a long voicemail, whatever you want to do, or let's grab a cup of coffee. And one gal said, I've got to talk it out. I've got to tell you, otherwise you won't get how everything came together. And I just thought that was cute. But would love to hear your story because we need to hear these stories. Like we've been talking about, it helps us when we can share what God's doing in our lives, because sometimes it feels like, okay, maybe that's just me. Maybe I didn't understand it right. Maybe it was just a weird coincidence. There just aren't any coincidences. And so, let's spend some time worshiping God and come to the Lord's table when you're ready. But let's stand together and let's sing this song as Ryan leads us.